Namaste Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 24, Worshipping Govardhan Hill, Text 5 through 7. The word meanings for Text 5, Udasinaha, one who is indifferent, Arivat, just like an enemy, Bharjaha, is to be avoided, Atmavat, like one's own self, Sudit, a friend, Uchite, is said to be. Udasino rivad varja, Atmavat surir uchite, Udasino rivad varja, Atmavat surid uchyate. Udasino rivad varja. Atmavat surid uchyate.
Udasino rivad varja.
Udasino rivad varja. Atmavat surir uchyate. Udasino rivad varjya. Atmavat surir uchyate. Udasino rivad varjya. Atmavat surir uchyate. Udasino rivad varja. Atmavat surir uchyate. Ladies. Udasino rivad varja. Atmavat surir uchyate. Udasino rivad varja. Atmavat surir uchyate. Udasino rivad varja. Atmavat surir uchyate. Udasino rivad varja. Atmavat surid uchyate. Translation. One who is neutral may be avoided like an enemy, but a friend should be considered like one's own self. So that you understand the beginning of the purport, I have to read part of the previous verse. Text 4, Krishna said, certainly no secrets are to be kept by saintly personalities. That's the main point. So purport. Even if Nanda Maharaj did not see friends, enemies, and neutral parties as entirely equal, Lord Krishna, being Nanda Maharaj's son, was certainly a most trustworthy friend and should therefore not be left out of intimate discussions. In other words, Nanda Maharaj might have thought that as a householder, he could not act on the highest saintly platform. And thus, Lord Krishna furnished additional reasons why his father should trust him and reveal the entire purpose of the sacrifice. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, Nanda Maharaj stood silent, doubting his position of parental aloofness. Since Garga Muni had predicted that his son would be equal to Narayan in his qualities, And the young boy had already conquered and killed many powerful demons. Text 6. Khyatva khyatva chakarmani janoyam anutishtati vidusha karma siddhi syad yata navidusho bhavet. When people in this world perform activities, sometimes they understand what they are doing and sometimes they don't. Those who know what they are doing achieve success in their work, whereas ignorant people do not. Purport. The Lord here informs his father that people should perform a particular ceremony or activity only after thoroughly understanding it through discussion with friends. We should not be blind followers of tradition. If a person doesn't even know what he's doing, how can he be successful in his work? This essentially is the Lord's argument in this verse. Since Sri Krishna, as the young child of Nanda, would naturally be expected to show enthusiasm for his father's religious activities, it was the father's duty to give the son a thorough explanation of the ceremony. Tatra tavat kriya yogo bhavatam kim vicharitaha atavalokikastanme prichata sadhu bhanyatam. Such being the case, this ritualistic endeavor of yours should be clearly explained to me. Is it a ceremony based on scriptural injunction or simply a custom of ordinary society? Om Jnanatimirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Children always ask why about many things. So here we see Krishna doing this. When Krishna asks, of course, he really wants to know, and he's qualified to know. So he's seeing this ritual, and he doesn't want to just do it blindly. Prabhupada used to would tell us, I think Prabhupada told this story, at least it's a story that's been around for a while, how these sages would bathe in the river. Many sages would bathe in the same place, and they all had the same kind of lotus. So when they would go in to bathe in the river, when they would come out, they couldn't tell which lota was theirs because they all looked alike. So one of them had an idea, well, I'll roll up some clay and I'll put a little ball inside my lota. So when I come out, I'll see it and I'll know, well, that's mine. So he did that and it worked okay, but next day he came out and all of the lotas had little balls in them. So people thought it was a new ritual you were supposed to do when you were bathing. It was to roll a ball of clay and put it in your lota. Ashman cup? Okay, sorry. So in any case, they were just blindly following him. So this, of course, is a very common thing. People blindly follow in so many ways. That's how we get fads in society. You ask people, why did you dye your hair green? Well, I don't know. Just because somebody else did it. So things change all the time. This fad, that fad, this is in style, this is in vogue. Even philosophies happen that way. Society is guided by, somehow there's sort of a worldview that permeates different times, different ages. People think in different ways as a whole. Today, of course, materialism is rampant. It has full control, basically, the whole world, people's way of thinking. And people don't question it. They enter into a society in a certain way, that is a certain way, and they just do what everybody else is doing. Prahlad Maharaj, he said, I was following the general populace, following into a blind well full of snakes, but Narada Muni saved me from that. So this tends to be what people do. They just follow along. What everybody else is doing, we go with the flow. We tend not to ask why. Why is this done this way? Even in religion, of course, even here we're talking about the context of a religious ritual. We had an article in BTG, I think it was last year. I forget what the title was, something to do with ritual. But in the beginning of the article, the devotee, the author said, he quotes a friend of his who had attended a wedding, and the priests were chanting mantras. And of course, most of the people there, they don't know what the priests are saying. That, of course, that happens in India. You hire priests to do things for you, but you have no idea what they're doing. You go to the bathing god, crematorium god, and they have you do this puja, and they say this, do this, touch your nose, touch your ear. So you just do it. You don't know what you're doing, but you just do it. So this wedding, the priests were chanting different mantras, and someone who knew some Sanskrit said, these are funeral mantras they're chanting. Of course, nobody knew, but they all sounded alike to them. Didn't sound like a very auspicious start for that wedding, for that marriage. So just people, and of course, people are following along and doing the rituals, having no idea what's going on there. We're supposed to know what we're doing. Sometimes we also have our Vedic sacrifices, and some of the things that take place are a little strange, breaking coconuts and whatever we do. So it's nice when the priests are explain to us what's going on. Otherwise, it can seem a little weird, some of the rituals that are carried on. So it's good if it's explained to us. So it was nice here. As Krishna says, if you know what you're doing, you'll be successful. If you don't know what you're doing, then you won't be successful. So in the context of spiritual life, you could say that's true and not true. In some sense, Prabhupada would point out that to chant Hare Krishna, you don't have to know anything. Like fire, it will burn. The scientist knows what the fire is made of, and the little child doesn't know anything about what the fire is made of. But they'll both be burned if they touch the fire. So the potency is there, whether you know or not. But still, understanding is a very important part of what we do in general, you can say. You can start off in ignorance and get some benefit, but we're supposed to learn. We, as devotees, of course, we cherish the word bhakti. And maybe the word jnana doesn't appeal to us so much. Huh? Rupa Goswami tells us we have to have bhakti that's free of jnana. And Lord Brahma, he says, jnane prayasa mudapasya namanta eva. Kick out jnana. But there are different kinds of jnana. Of course, jnana just means knowledge. So jnana, specifically that Lord Brahma is talking about, and Rupa Goswami is talking about, is the path of jnana as speculative endeavor to understand the absolute truth. That we don't put our faith in. We don't think that we're going to get transcendental knowledge. We want jnana. We want transcendental knowledge. But not through the process of jnana, which means the process of philosophical speculation. So the word jnana is not a bad thing. Just like the word mukti is not a bad thing. Like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, when he became a devotee, then he didn't like the word mukti anymore. Mukti pade. He wanted to change the verse in the Bhagavatam that mentions mukti pade. Because mukti is for the impersonalists. It becomes associated with them. Or with impersonal liberation. It's generally used in that context. Just like the word om, even we ourselves, we sometimes joke about om. The yogis are chanting om. But om is Krishna. Om is, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, om is Hare Krishna. So we shouldn't blaspheme the holy name of om. But it tends to have a certain connotation because the impersonalists like to chant om. But om is Krishna. So certain words get certain connotations according to how they're used in society, used in general. So jnana also for a devotee may think, well, we're not interested in jnana, but we are certainly interested in jnana. We're interested in knowledge. We're interested in learning. Last night I just did a quick search on the Vedabase, and I wanted to see how many verses have the word jnana in it. And just the word jnana, specifically spelled jnana without any other grammatical ending, there are like 21 verses. And then, of course, some verses may have it more than once. And then jnanam is another 30-something. And then jnanena, there's a few more. And then, of course, there are other related words like jatva and so on. So many, many verses in Bhagavad Gita use the word jnana. The fourth chapter, of course, is called Transcendental Knowledge. That chapter of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, that's where there's all these the verses that refer to sacrifice. The yogis sacrifice the ingoing breath to the outgoing breath. So it talks about pranayama, it talks about yoga, it talks about karmakanda. So the sacrifice of this and the sacrifice of that. So all of these different kinds of sacrifices, they're supposed to end in jnana. In fact, the verse that Prabhupada would quote for accepting a guru, jnaninas tattvadarshina, says, approach a jnani who knows the truth. Literally is what the verse says. A jnani who is tattvadarshi, he's the one who will give you the truth. The word guru is not mentioned in that verse. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshantite jnanam jnaninas tattvadarshina. If you want jnana, tadvidi, tat means that. Knowledge means knowledge about all these things that I've been talking about, sacrificing this into that and this, all these different kinds of sacrifices. If you want knowledge of those things, then you go to a jnani who has seen the truth. So we're certainly interested in we're interested in transcendental knowledge. In a Nectar Devotion, Prabhupada says that to be a devotee, one must first have jnana, or one must first be a jnani. Of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, we taught the path of jnana is described also. Bahunam janmanam ante jnanavam mam prapadyate. If one is vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabha. And when you cultivate, if you do it the right way, cultivate jnana with, you can say, at least some bhakti. Bhakti is not your path, jnana is your path, but some bhakti. There has to be some devotion. We can say that just like the jnanis, if they want impersonal realization, then they have some attraction to Brahman. So that's a kind of devotion, you can say. Any kind of attraction, we say attraction or love. Attraction is one of the preliminary aspects of love. To be attracted to something means your love is beginning to awaken. So there's a kind of love there, you say, or devotion, or at least devotion to the goal that the jnanis have. So that tinge of devotion helps them arrive at the goal of understanding. Vasudeva sarvamiti. That's what they understand. Vasudeva is everything. I just happened to be reading last night, there's a purport, very long purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Volume 1, Chapter 4, about the Chaturvyuha. Quite a technical purport where there are arguments given against Sankaracharya. He has argued in his commentary on Vedanta Sutra, that the Chaturvyuha, Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha are ordinary jivas. And he gives different arguments why he says. Basically, his argument is the point that he's missing in his arguments is Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, and you get right down to it. So the Acharyas have given different. Our Acharyas have given different counter-arguments to Shankaracharya. But there's just one line there, which Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, that Vasudeva is the form of Krishna without his internal potency. So I thought that was quite interesting. So I guess we don't have any Radha Vasudeva deities. Vasudeva alone, Krishna alone, in his form as Vasudeva, is that without his internal potency. So Vasudeva is also considered the all-pervasive aspect of Krishna. So the jnanis, they understand this. And they come to the point of understanding this greatness. Yogis also, in the Nectar of Devotion, is described in Shanta Rasa, is when one realizes this aspect of God, that God is everywhere, or realizes the super soul in the heart. And the yogi is just overwhelmed by the greatness of God and becomes stunned. God is just so great, he just gets blown over by it. And he can't do anything, really. At least this is one kind. There's different kinds of different classes, you can say, categories of Shantarasa. But this is one. The yogis are in Shantarasa, where they're just awestruck. And their mouths just hang open, and they can't do anything but just look. It's like in Judeo-Christian, or at least Christian theology, they talk about the beatific vision, where you just see God, and you just basically hover and look, I guess, is what happens. You're stunned. So this is like Shantarasa. So this is a kind of knowledge also, preliminary knowledge of God. Brahman realization is a kind of knowledge, and Paramatma realization is a kind of knowledge. And then Bhagavan realization is full understanding of God. So we want to get full understanding, and we do it by following what Srila Prabhupada gave us. And in doing that, we should understand what we're doing. We should be conscious of what we're doing. I find that there's so much opportunity in the morning program to just try to concentrate, really concentrate, and think about what we're doing when we're chanting the Guru Vashtakam and chanting Guru Puja, Tulsi Arati. Of course, we say the translation, at least to Tulsi Arati and Guru Puja, we say before. But as we're saying them also, we have to be thinking about something. So if you know the meaning of the words, it's very helpful. And they're so amazing, actually. The Guru Vashtakam, it has so much meaning. And especially the Tulsi prayer. Sometimes I think, boy, how is it that we're able to say this prayer? We're complete, rank neophytes. And we're asking to be mantris. That's really what the prayer is. We're praying to Tulsi Maharani to make us her followers. Seva adhikar diye. Koro nija dasi. Give me the adhikar, the privilege, seva of seva, your seva, seva adhikar diye, koro nija dasi. Make me your maidservant. E nive dhanadara sukir anugata koro. Make me an anugata, a follower of Sukhi. This specific, actually, there in Dasara Sutta's word for word translation of the song, he says, a particular, because apparently this is, I don't know the grammar, but this is in the singular. So, basically he's saying, I want to be the follower of this particular gopi, Vrinda Devi. So we're praying to be manjaris. Every day we're praying to be manjaris. So this is just astounding, I think. You know, how are we allowed to do that? Because of Prabhupada, that's how we're allowed to do it. But if we're not thinking, and we're namo, namo, and we're just la, 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 we're having fun, we're chanting. Of course, the vibration itself is purifying. I don't want to dismiss that idea. The vibration itself, transcendental vibration, is purifying. But if we're actually conscious and we're thinking, because why are we praying to Tulsi? Because she will fulfill our desires. That's how the verses, the prayers begin. You fulfill desires. Yetumara shradanaloi, taravancha purnahoi. One who takes your shelter gets his or her desires fulfilled. So if you're thinking of something else, which may not be the best thing for you, the most beneficial thing, we tend to think of so many things. Our minds wander. So she may say, oh, that's what you want. And well, that desire will be fulfilled, and not become a manjari. That desire will be, and we'll have to lament. Like Dhruva Maharaj, Prabhupada says in one purport. If we're not careful, we'll have to lament like Dhruva Maharaj. We maintain material desires. So being conscious of what we're doing and understanding. And Prabhupada so much emphasized this. I also came across one devotee wrote a letter where she quoted many, many places where Prabhupada talked about studying our shastras very, very carefully and discussing among yourselves. He would often say this, discuss among yourselves. Try to see from different angles of vision. Try to bring out different lights. There's a famous letter that has kind of come up a little bit now among devotees. in debates about certain things, where Prabhupada, he was disturbed that many, even of his leading devotees, didn't understand the philosophy. So he wrote a letter, actually Tamal Krishnamaharaj wrote it, but it was from Prabhupada, and it was basically an order to his leaders to institute this Bhakti Shastri, and I don't even know the names of Bhakti Vaibhav and Bhakti Vedanta, the different degrees, and he said which books should go with which degrees. And Prabhupada really wanted it to be instituted in a very formal way. And he wanted the Brahmins, if you're a Brahmin, you had to pass this test. And if you're a sannyasi, you had to pass the other test. And he had indicated in an earlier letter, many years earlier, that those who passed the Bhakti Vedanta, they would be qualified to become gurus. So Prabhupada was very, he really wanted his disciples to study his books and understand his books. One reason, he said, was so that you don't become embarrassed when you preach. He wanted devotees to be able to quote shastras to support their points. Especially, of course, in arguing against the Mayavadis. What was Prabhupada's main mission? I often think of this. If I remember, I'm pretty sure I'm correct in saying Prabhupada wrote his own pranam mantra. Isn't that true? Right. Prabhupada wrote it because who was going to write it? Right? There weren't any Sanskrit scholars in the early days. So Prabhupada wrote it. So what did he emphasize? He didn't emphasize, you know, Prabhupada is in some kind of Mahabhava or something. He emphasized preaching. That was what he wanted to be, how he wanted his disciples to see him and to honor him for as a preacher, especially a preacher who's come to defeat impersonalism and voidism. So Prabhupada especially wanted his disciples to be equipped for that. That is my understanding of why Srila Prabhupada produced the seventh chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita by itself, Lord Chaitanya in five features. Because what is that, the main point of that? Of course, it describes Panchatattva, at least somewhat in the beginning, but our books don't really have a lot of information about Panchatattva. So there's something about Panchatattva in the beginning, so that the book is called Lord Chaitanya in five features. But the bulk of the chapter is Lord Chaitanya's talks with Prakashananda Saraswati. And in those purports, there are all the arguments for defeating the Mayavadis. So that has always been my understanding. That's why Prabhupada was eager to get this chapter out there, to fortify us in our preaching against the Mayavadis. So Prabhupada wanted us to be knowledgeable. It's not that we shun jnana and we just want to immediately go into the highest stage, where you transcend all of that, where you're on the stage of the gopis, and maybe there's some jnana there, maybe there's not. It doesn't really matter. It's sort of irrelevant. It's not irrelevant for us, that's for sure. It makes us strong. Siddhanta baliya chitte nakara alas. I often quote this. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, don't be lazy in understanding the Siddhanta, because understanding the Siddhanta makes our mind strong for being Krishna conscious, and to thwart the attacks of Maya. So here we see in this verse, Krishna is wanting a clear understanding. He doesn't want to do it without understanding what he's doing. Then he says, then you become successful. So we also, of course, another aspect of it is if we really understand, then we won't be bewildered and diverted, and we won't fall down. We won't be misled by other philosophies. And that's why it's so important, of course, in our hearing that we have to hear from Prabhupada. I've been thinking of this more and more lately. It's a dangerous world out there. Philosophically, it's a dangerous world. Even the world of bhakti today, it's a dangerous world. There are many pitfalls. There are many off-ramps. Like these, you see sometimes there are construction sites and they're building a flyover. They're called flyovers. And then sometimes they haven't quite finished one and it just kind of goes out, and then they have some barrels at the end. And if you turn off that one and keep going, you're going to be airborne, end up in another interstate in a nosedive. So there are off-ramps like that these days also. And many devotees are getting distracted and sidetracked and bewildered and going places where they're not ready to go. And Prabhupada is very concerned about these things. He had his way. Prabhupada had his way. And if we want to be safe, we better stick to his lotus feet, because we don't know. We don't know. It's a difficult... Bhakti has so many subtleties. There's so many subtle traps. There's so many subtle traps out there laying in wait for us. So we have to be fixed up in Prabhupada's way, Prabhupada's books, the way he explained things, what he emphasized. And we have to, and there's so much to read. One of these letters this lady was quoting, Prabhupada said, what did he say? Was it 1 year or 1 month? I forget what it was. Every verse, I think he said something. Yeah, I think he said, every verse. There are 18,000 verses. You spend 1 month on every verse, so 18,000 months. How much is that? It was like 150 years or something like that. So he said, don't waste your time. Well, that's the purport. I find that I read, and then I come across something and I say, oh, I want to read that. You know, I want to read this book. And I always have about 8 books stacked up on my reading table. But then I think, oh, but no, I got to get back to Bhagavad Gita. And the Bhagavad Gita is so much nectar. And you read it, and there's always, we have help now. You read Bhagavad Gita and you can get help. Like Burjan's book, Surrender Unto Me, is a very nice book. It really helps to understand things. He's done a very thorough study. And there are so many seminars. And we could spend the rest of our life on Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes I think that's a problem. We have too many books. If we just had Bhagavad Gita and just mastered that, of course, I don't want to say Prabhupada translated too many books, but there are so many things, but we have to really apply ourselves. I've said this before. It's not that we just review it. It's that we also just don't want to have a list of books and I want to check them off. Okay, I finished that one. All right, time for the next one. And go just, you know, blaze through them. But we have to understand them. Even if it takes us a month to understand one chapter, we should do it and understand these things thoroughly. And it can easily take that long. You read it over and over again and you get help. And there are so many seminars. And so Prabhupada just wanted us to have gyan. Dibya gyan hriday prakashito. We say also, dibya gyan, the spiritual master gives us transcendental knowledge. Oma gyan timirandasya gyan anjana shalakaya. We can see when we have that gyan given by the guru. When we're in the light, then we don't trip over things in the darkness, as will happen if we're not seeing in the light. So, the verse again. First verse. Udasino rivad varja atmavat surit uchite. One who is neutral may be avoided like an enemy, but a friend should be considered like one's own self. So mostly I spoke on the other verses, but so questions. Madan Mohan Prabhu is back to ask us questions. Very nice to have you back. Microphone. Gayatri Mantra.
It says that's why it's given to Brahmins, is so theoretically or practically speaking, they're predominated by the mode of goodness, so the mantra works. But we're reading in the 7th canto, 11th chapter in L.A., and they're saying that sutras, they're not given mantras. They can offer obeisances, and that's their sacrifice. That's the sacrifice they offer. Because they didn't have it. And then, of course, near Matsaram Satam, it says that the truth is locked. Unless one is not envious, then the truth also is not. How does it say that in the second verse? That the truth.
Vejjan Bhastavamatravasu Shivanam Tapataramam. Before that? Dharma Prachita Kaita Bhotra Paramon Nimatsaranam Satam. But Nimatsaranam Satam.
Understandable by those devotees that are thoroughly pure in heart. That truth is reality, distinguished from illusion, for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. So it says that's understandable. So I was noticing that it's the methodology of the sadhana and regulation and coming up actually when you're predominated by goodness, which is certainly a great accomplishment or mercy to ever be able to do that. Then there's another meaning that comes. That meaning before may not be, it, there is meaning that someone can get when he's in the mode of passion, mode of ignorance, but it's often a different meaning. So I, just in controversies, I've noticed that how that works. People have different meanings to each of the words because of the mode of nature that they're being influenced by.
Yes, not everyone sees the same. We think, atmavat manyate jagat, we think that everyone should see like I see, but according to the influence of the modes of nature, and of course according to how well we've heard too, we'll see differently. Pushkar Prabhu? And give it to Maharaj.
Yeah, this is.
Yeah, you turned it off.
Haribol.
Is it on?
I don't know.
Didn't sound like it. It was working.
Haribol.
Now it's on.
Okay, maybe no battery.
No, no, it's for the internet. I think it's on now.
It should be on or ST?
It's on.
Okay, it's on.
Okay, sorry about that. This is my favorite subject. And this whole idea of, we hear that one of the subjects of our studies of Prabhupada's books is called knowledge. But actually, everything is knowledge. All the different subjects are knowledge. So we can hone in on that subject, and what it really means is knowledge about knowledge, which is technically known as epistemology, theory of knowledge. And that's a very major subject. I found at least 35 verses in Bhagavad Gita which are in that line. And one point is we have, in order to get realization, you have to have knowledge. In other words, we just say, well, it's knowledge, you know, it's not important. We need realization. But Prabhupada said, it is a quote, that without gyan, you cannot get vigyan. So we have to know it. And when you say that, well, it all comes automatically. It'll just happen automatically. But not necessarily. You may think that you're realizing something, but if it's shruti, smriti, puranadi, etc., if it's not according to shastra, and it's not even logical, then our realization may be just some sentiment. Just one, there's a lot of applications, and just to be very brief, I was in a Ratiyatra in New York, and I know Alachua, I was told, Raman Reddy, you have to be very politically correct, I was warned that, so I'll just say one god sibling approached a book table that I was manning in the Ratiyatra, and we were offering both versions of the 72 version and the 1982 of the Bhagavad Gita. In other words, the revised version and the earlier version. And this devotee said that she... Devotee chose the earlier version, and he said, "Oh, you prefer that version rather than the revised version that with the corrections?" And she said, "I'll go with bhakti. I'm not interested in the gyan like that." This is just some food for thought. That purport that you mentioned about the Chaturvyuha, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe Pushkar might be able to help in this. I know you won't. Okay. I would say it's the longest purport in all of Prabhupada's books, the all-time longest purport. Even longer than the Chaturshloka Bhagavatam purports, or even the first ones, yeah. It's amazingly elaborate, filled with so much knowledge. Then another, this is like a car park question, because this gets, you know, you can probably argue both ways, but and when the topic, not the topic itself, but the topic of whether or not to discuss the topic of the origin of the fallen state of the jiva, is that something that we shouldn't be lazy? Of course, there's the Krotal, and we know that, but at the same time, it just keeps coming up. I won't say to haunt us, but it seems like maybe Srila Prabhupada left us some work to be done. So would that be a proper application of the need to cultivate knowledge, to continue to study and to try to understand that? Or is it something we should just say, in my next lifetime, or just...
I find myself that, in fact, I was listening to a lecture by Suhocha Swami, who's a very, he's passed away, but very intellectual devotee. And he said, you know, there's sometimes we get to a point where we just have to say, I'm just not going to understand this. It's just, I think that's one of those things, to tell you the truth. Now, of course, we can argue siddhantically, or we can quote from our acharyas to establish this. But Prabhupada's mood when he was asked about it, of course, he gave the crow and tall fruit logic, was basically he was telling us, don't worry about it. And his answer to the question was generally, why are you worrying about this? You're in the middle of the ocean drowning, so just try to get out. Don't worry about how you got here. But you're right. I mean, it may come up that we have to debate for one reason or another. And the question does come up. It may depend on who's asking the question, the context of whether we have to get into the gyan, you might say. Prabhupada's answer generally was, don't worry about it. Just worry about getting out. So not everyone needs to. Of course, we have our book, The Origin of the Jiva, which was done, authorized ISKCON book. And you can always point people there, which of course is full of so many arguments. To me, it's very clear that Prabhupada argued that we came from Krishna. And if you don't like that Prabhupada said that, well, that's your problem, I guess. But it seems pretty clear to me that Prabhupada did say that as the final word. We are religiously with Krishna in his lila or sport.
Yeah, I forswore that we would enter into the topic, because we'll be going until about 2 o'clock in the afternoon if we start getting into it. But in terms of the hermeneutics of it, the epistemology of it, what is our, how do we approach the topic? First of all, Srila Prabhupada did actually give invested many words and many paragraphs helping the devotees to try to understand the issue. It wasn't exactly cut and dry. No, don't even worry about it. Don't even think about it. Although the siddhanta of that, you might say, is better to know where we're going than where we came from. I mean, let's just be practical. It's just that when our basis is Prabhupada. What Prabhupada said for us is Shastra. So we accept that, yes, we were with Krishna, but then we can find statements also that Srila Prabhupada stated, even wrote in books, such as the conclusion is that nobody falls from Vaikuntha. Jayan Vijaya is not. So sometimes this is just underscores the point that I think the main point you were trying to instill in us in this class is that we have to scrutinizingly study Prabhupada's books. We'll find so many apparent contradictions, and then scrutinizingly study means that how do we understand that? Not that we just, we can say, oh, it's a rope and it's a snake. And so when the guru says it's a rope, it's a rope. And then when he says it's a snake, it's a snake. Well, that's one answer. That when you're reading this, this is true. And we're reading something else that seems to contradict, and that's true. And just leave it at that. But for preaching at least, and for our own stability in Krishna consciousness, we need to feel that the thing is, that the whole philosophy is consistent. So when we see apparent contradictions, I don't think we should shy away from delving deeper into it and then trying to come up with the adjustment or the siddhanta. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay. In the beginning of class, talked about the Prabhupada was very amused when he saw the Charlie Chaplin film where, you know, he got his tail cut, and then all the guys showed up with their tails cut. I think that was really funny. Mm-hmm. You know, Prabhupada loved that. He saw it on the plane or something. He gave that example.
Yeah, that was another example of imitation. The cut tails. Krishna Keshava.
It's interesting that that came up, the apparent contradictions, because just recently, last week, at the prison, one of the prisoners, he knows a little more than everyone else, and therefore the point did come up about whether we fell from Vaikuntha or from the spiritual world, and there is a guarantee that I mean, if we go back there, we're not going to fall again. And so because he had a little more knowledge, there was need for a little more discussion. From the discussion, I thought that he may not be able to understand everything. And therefore, we discussed that, well, Srila Prabhupada just wanted us to, you know, be more interested in getting out of the material world rather than, you know, spend time on that kind of debate. So it's interesting. I'd like to talk with Maharaj a little more about that, how that can be rectified.
What point that you brought up on, every morning we pray that we want to be a manjari at the lotus feet of Tulsi. Sachu Maharaj recently wrote that was a controversial point in the early days of ISKCON, because the devotees went up to Prabhupada and said, well, do we want to be a manjari? Is that what we're praying for? And Prabhupada said, it's okay. You know, it's okay, just say the prayers. See, but like in the early ISKCON, a lot of the devotees, they were wondering, well, is that what we want?
You know, if we don't understand the Sanskrit, and we say the English, do we get the same benefit? Because even when I'm on the altar, sometimes when I don't understand the mantra, I say it in English. And it improves my consciousness a little more, but I don't know if you get the same benefit if you don't say the Sanskrit, because Prabhupada has said different places where the Sanskrit, even if you don't understand it, is so potent.
Yeah, potency is there. It just seems in principle, the more knowledge we have, the more we gain, and the more our meditation increases too. I know devotees have different ways of doing things. If you study, one thing I recommend, especially devotees who lead kirtans and sing the prayers, is that actually once in a while open up the songbook and look at every single syllable in every single prayer, make sure you're saying it right, and actually study the word for word. Now, I know it's hard to remember them. So I know, you know, I try to actually memorize the meaning of the Sanskrit words, word by word, but it's also, I know some devotees, they like while they're singing the Sanskrit, The translation is kind of going in there. The spiritual master is receiving benediction from the ocean of mercy. That's sort of running there. You're thinking like that while saying the Sanskrit. So that's good. At least you're conscious. The worst thing is just to be unconscious. I know. Somebody mentioned recently, I forget who it was, and I know I had that experience too. I'll stand there in front of the deities for 5 minutes and realize I actually haven't seen Krishna yet. I've been standing here looking in that direction, but my mind has been in some other place. You know? So, is that just me, or does that happen to other people? So yeah, so the more we can do, one thing I do a little, lately I've been, when I seek Sri Krishna, the Panchatattva mantra, when I chant Sri Krishna Chaitanya, I look at Lord Chaitanya, Nityananda, I look at Lord Nityananda, and then the rest of the Panchatattva, I look at the picture and I look at each one of them, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda, I look at the Parampara. I'm just trying to keep my mind focused what I'm doing here. So that's just, anyway, that's the main point. Whatever we can do to concentrate more and to enter into the meaning of what we're doing. And that's why there's no reason to be bored at the morning program, because it's unlimitedly deep. We can penetrate, enter into it more and more and more. Yeah, Niyamagraha, Niyamagraha. Okay, Madan Mohan Prabhu. A simple way? Repetition, that's the only way. Just keep studying it, yeah. Now, sometimes I think Prabhupada wrote these books and he, just like we have the word for word, why did he put it, who did he write these books for? He wrote them for us. So when we're reading, that's, you know, sometimes we want to get through, I want to get through the chapter. But it's really helpful to look at the Sanskrit word for word. And as you do that, you build up vocabulary over time. We should actually start learning a few Sanskrit words, you know, after 30, 40 years. So then we, when we're chanting the Sanskrit, we start understanding it more and more. We're learning a foreign language. That's the thing. Our liturgy is in two foreign languages, Bengali and Sanskrit. So we should have at least some basic understanding of the vocabulary, and also so we don't just massacre and say gibberish. You know, Krishna's uttama shloka, if we're saying gulub jalabri julab nurabab, you know, just saying nonsense gibberish, because what we're supposed to be glorifying Krishna, we're saying it like who knows what we're saying, you know. So we should understand the words. That's another reason for understanding, is that we pronounce it correctly, learn the words. So it takes study. That's why we don't have time to waste. There's a lot to learn. All right, let's stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.